Hello, and welcome to the Cancer Horizons podcast. In each episode, you'll hear from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals to do what CURE does best: provide cancer updates, research, and education.
When Kate Weissman received her diagnosis of stage 2B cervical cancer at the age of 30, she was also told by her oncologist that she would not be able to carry children. Kate began IVF, froze 9 embryos, and she and her husband Matt eventually had a daughter via surrogacy. Now an ambassador for Survivor, a community of patient advocates working with those affected by cervical cancer, and a 2023 Survivor Champion recipient, Kate is also the Massachusetts State Lead Ambassador the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. On this episode of CURE's Cancer Horizons podcast, Kate discussed her cancer journey, evolving attitudes towards post-cancer life, and her passion for patient advocacy.
I was diagnosed in October 2015 with stage 2B cervical cancer. I was 30 years old at the time. So actually, within the same appointment that my oncologist told me with stage 2B, it's in a lymph node, she told me I was not going to be able to carry children down the road and gave me the option to do IVF and create embryos to be used later on and carried via a surrogate down the road. So within that same appointment of finding out I had cancer and that it was stage 2B, I found out that I would not be able to carry children. So a lot of the trauma that the women experience of not only being faced with their mortality, they're also being handed a bombshell that is very difficult to prepare for. But I went through a full year of treatment after that diagnosis. I went through 55 rounds of radiation, 17 rounds of chemotherapy, and a surgery, and finally was declared cancer-free a full year later because the cancer during that year was spreading through my lymphatic system. So a bunch of different things had to sort of happen for me. And at the end of that year, you know, I had fully gone into menopause because the radiation had shut my ovaries down. I had lost a ton of weight. I had lost my hair. I really was unrecognizable. And I'd been through a lot of trauma. A lot of the treatments for women with cervical cancer are also not very advanced. They're actually quite barbaric in nature. So I was dealing with a lot of side effects, sexual side effects, and, you know, a lot of pain in my body that I never experienced before. So I really came out that year pretty unrecognizable to myself, but slowly, you know, over the last several, you know, 7-8 years, I've been able to rebuild. And my story ended positively with the birth of my daughter via surrogacy. But of course, again, I was just one of the lucky ones that I was able to even do that. When I ended my treatment in 2016, I was initially going for scans every 3 to 6 months. And then after a couple of years, I was slowly able to extend those scans out. So now I go annually. I will tell you, the anxiety is always with you. It never loosens its grip. You are always worried about it coming back. And even though I'm lucky to only have to deal with scanxiety, as we call in the cervical cancer community, and really the cancer community in general, once a year, it's really intense. And I still have to keep up to date on my anti-anxiety medications and my therapy sessions and everything. Now that I have a child, it's really made that anxiety of the cancer coming back all that more intense. And it feels like a lot more is at stake. But I am lucky that, you know, I survived, and it's a once a year thing for me. I still just report basically to my oncologist. I don't have a OBG, you know, that's a typical OBG anymore. Life is just a little different for me. But, you know, I have access to a medical team that is going to always watch me and look out for me. And I'm aware of my own body and everything I need to, you know, be on the lookout for too in the years post-treatment. So that's been certainly something that it never loosens its grip on you. Even when you find out you're cancer-free, you're in this for the rest of your life. I'm not sure that the community is catching up to the speed in which people are surviving cancer. I still think that the treatments are still just based around curing it, which of course is the priority. But I think we're seeing more and more, I'll bet, a little bit slower than I would like. Treatments that are now taking into consideration post-cancer life. Yes, we can cure it, but how can we cure it to improve the quality of life of these patients as well? We need to do a better job of ensuring that the treatment that we're giving these patients is not going to alter their lives negatively for the rest of their lives. Like I said, for cervical cancer patients, the brachytherapy that a lot of us went through, which is internal radiation, that has caused all of us side effects that will last for the rest of our lives. Our vaginas were shortened. We have scar tissue still in our vaginas. We have sexual side effects that will last forever. And I think that in the 70s, when brachytherapy was created, that was not taken into consideration. So I think more and more, I just hope the science catches up to the idea that more people are surviving cancer, and we need to make sure that their life after cancer is high quality. After I finished treatment in October 2016, I was really picking up the pieces of my life, and I had access to mental health resources. I was in therapy. I was on medication to help with my depression and my anxiety. And then after a couple of years, I sat back and I said, I need to be a voice for the women who didn't survive this. I survived this, and I feel a responsibility, and I feel almost an obligation to make sure that the future generation doesn't have to go through what I have to go through. And the thing about cervical cancer advocacy is that this is a cancer we can prevent from happening because we have a vaccine that is accessible and effective and affordable that can prevent cervical cancer. So this is not the type of cancer when I do my advocacy work that when people ask me, well, how do you get cervical cancer? How can we prevent it from happening? I don't have the answers to. I have the answers to this one. So it's really just about raising awareness. So the fact is, it was really cathartic for me to get back into the community and make sure that we were tackling the stigma of cervical cancer, the stigma of HPV-related cancers. And I'm somebody who's comfortable using my voice. A lot of women who have had cervical cancer retreat because of the stigma associated with it. And I'm willing to kind of be uncomfortable and break through those barriers because I'm alive and I'm lucky to be alive. So I think that that's something that really drives me every day. And I think a lot of people also don't talk about survivor's guilt. A lot of people who survive cancer really feel that constantly. And it's a way for me to channel my survivor's guilt. It's a way for me to channel my anxiety about it coming back into a positive way and educate communities that really are misinformed about HPV-related cancers and cervical cancer. So this is my opportunity. I'm here. I'm healthy. I have resources. I have a voice. So I'm going to keep fighting for as long as I possibly can. So my daughter and her generation doesn't really know that this exists, or, you know, maybe it's the generation after that, but we're getting closer and closer to this thing being gone.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cancer Horizons podcast or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cancer Horizons podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. Find us on Facebook and Instagram at Cure Today, and on X at Cure_today. And be sure to sign up for Cure's e-newsletter for the latest in cancer updates, research, and educational opportunities.